For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Stoking the flames of kindness. Rumi says, your task is not to seek for love, but to merely seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. All the barriers within yourself that you have built against love. If you're like me, you struggle with feeling like you're enough. You struggle with feeling sometimes broken, like you've messed up your life, even if your life looks really good on the outside. And in order to take the power away from those feelings, you have to realize that it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to be stressed out. It's okay to be feeling scattered. It's okay to not be doing your meditation practice. It's okay to do 6 days out of seven. We have to teach ourselves that it's okay to not be perfect, because you know what? We're all human, and none of us are perfect, and none of us ever will be perfect. And if we're striving for perfection, we're always going to be feeling bad about ourselves. Rick Hansen says, if you suppress or disown parts of yourself, feeling bad about who you are can easily follow, with the sense that there are nasty, weak, shameful, or unlovable things inside of you. It may feel uneasy and tense to keep so much at bay. We end up playing small around others to keep them away from all that we cannot accept about ourselves. Anyone here ever play small with others to keep them away from all the things that you don't want them to see about yourself because you don't like it? I know after being rejected by my best friend in seventh grade, I played small around others to keep them from seeing some flaw that I had, that I thought I had, that anyone who saw it would reject me. I had no idea what that flaw was, but there was something. So I had to play small around others and just be who they wanted me to be. Otherwise, I was afraid they'd reject me. Because I felt there was something wrong with me. And then this kind of got confirmed when I got divorced, a big rejection a second time. And so instead of reaching out for support, I withdrew, and I never saw any hands that were reaching out to help me, because I thought there was something wrong with me and I had to make myself small so no one would know that there was something wrong with me. I had to act like everything was fine. And in both of those cases, I started the relationship being who I thought they wanted me to be. In seventh grade, I was really shy. So I was this shy girl who would go along with whatever my friend wanted and laugh at all her jokes and let her be in the limelight. And when I finally started getting comfortable with the group and coming out of my shell and showing my sense of humor, I think I was beginning to take some of the spotlight off of her. And so she told me I didn't fit with the group anymore. I thought it was something wrong with me, but when I look back with 20/20 hindsight, that probably was not the case. And when dating and married to my ex, I tried to be, as our favorite singer Jackson Browne would say, the picture of somebody you were hoping I might be. I tried to be more outgoing, to enjoy going out to the bars, to be into music, and I did that for many, many years. But after I had kids, I just didn't have the energy to keep up that mask, to be that person, because that wasn't who I was. And my exhaustion allowed me to actually see more of who I was and who I wasn't. Catherine Morgan Schiffler says, the best way to be more of who you are is to understand what's already inside of you. It's there. It's just that in order to get there, you have to stop being who you're not. How many times are we being who we're not? Stop trying to eradicate what's wrong with you. That's never the solution. So if we want to be authentic and be true to ourselves, we have it in ourselves already. We don't need to find who we are. We need to uncover who we are, because we have it covered up with all these masks and brick walls and things we've developed to keep us safe. It's really hard for a people pleaser to stop being who you're not, especially when you've been pleasing people with who you were in that way. You want to make people happy. You want them to like you. And you assume they won't like you the way you truly are. So we don our mask to hide who we really are. But we don't really need that mask. What we need is to develop relationships with people who accept us as we are. Instead of having that mask to keep a relationship with someone who doesn't accept us as we are, or might not accept us as we are. Tara Brock says, donning masks to hide the pain of unmet needs and to defend our vulnerability, we further narrow our sense of who we are. We wear the disguise of busy, important person, that was me, angry victim, deficient person, or obsessed, addicted person. We all have a mask that we put on and we wear. And we think that's going to keep us safe. But if we really want to face our challenges and our vulnerabilities, we need some inner strength. And the inner strengths are the supplies you've got in your pack as you make your way down the twisting and often hard road of life. According to Rick Hansen, he says they include a positive mood, common sense, integrity, inner peace, determination, and a warm heart. On average, about one-third of a person's strengths are innate, one-third. Built into his or her genetically based temperament, talents, mood, and personality. The other two-thirds are developed over time. You get them by growing them. So we can all grow our inner strengths if we're willing to put in the time and the practice. But it takes time and it takes practice in order to do that. And the thing is, life is never going to get easier. We always say it's going to be better after this, or as soon as this is over with, life will be fine. But life is always going to throw you another curveball. With more inner strength, you can handle it better. So now's the time to start building the inner strength. As this was attributed to Mark Twain and a number of other people, but he said, build the well before you're thirsty. Build your inner strength before you need it. We often lie to ourselves and say, you know, I don't need to do that. As soon as I get past this, everything's going to be fine. But our inner strength is what we need to fuel us when life gets hard, and life will get hard. We need to tell ourselves, you can do this hard thing. It's a great song by Carrie Newcomer. My inability to face my vulnerabilities made it near impossible for me to practice self-compassion or loving kindness for myself. I projected a carefully curated image of being knowledgeable, competent, even-keeled, and most important of all, need-free. I didn't need anything, even if I really did. There was no room for my needs or negative emotions to get in the way. I swept any negative emotion or problem I could not immediately fix under the carpet. And this was often done unconsciously, yet it consumes a lot of energy. and it shapes our brain. Our brains are shaped by where we rest our attention, whether it's conscious or unconscious. So if I rest my brain on all the things wrong with me, that's the direction I'm leaning my brain toward, to think about that more. If we shape in, when we rest our brain on what's wrong with us, our brain is going to be shaped into greater reactivity, anxiety, anger, or sadness. However, if we rest our attention on the good within us, our brain will take a different shape, one with strength and resilience hardwired into it. Love and understanding are not things we're born with. They're the result of how we use our minds and how we practice. We can choose to train our minds to truly love by understanding ourselves and others. Or we can allow our stories and habit energies to make us feel separate, alone, and in need of defending ourselves. True love is generated from within. It's not bound up in things being a certain way. To truly love someone, you need to feel complete in yourself. True love includes accepting yourself and others as they are now, with all their strengths and weaknesses. On his podcast, 10% Happier, I heard Dan Harris say, "Love is our evolutionary capacity to give a shit. It's our ability to cooperate, communicate, and connect. If you ignore this, it is at your own peril." And a lot of times we ignore the love because we get so caught up in our day-to-day things. And because we think maybe we can't have it, we think either it's naturally there or it's not. But love takes work. You can only grow love on the ground of understanding. If you don't understand, you can't truly love. Understand yourself and understand others. And mindfulness meditation is what slows us down so we can see what really is needed for happiness and what really causes suffering. Because a lot of times things we think are going to make us happy actually cause us suffering. But we have to slow down and see and learn and understand. So when we practice, we can see how much peace, happiness, and lightness we have, as well as how much anger, irritation, fear, or anxiety are in us. And as we become aware of the feelings in us, our self-understanding deepens. We see how our fears and lack of peace contribute to our unhappiness. And then we see the value of understanding those we love. Because love isn't giving someone something that you want, it's giving them something that they want and need. So nourishing love is a lifelong practice. The more you practice, the more you see your love grow. And the practice is really kindness practice. Because kindness practice counteracts the loneliness and the sense of separation that comes from not feeling connected to other people. You may start by simply changing your self-talk. Instead of saying, "I'm not good enough," maybe you say, "Wow, my inner critic is really active today." Do you see the difference in how you feel with those two statements? Or maybe when you're telling yourself, "I'm so selfish," you say, "I've given all that I'm willing to give today." We're taking the judgment out and saying it's okay to not be 100%, to give 100% all the time. Instead of "I'm so lazy," maybe say, "I'm tired and am allowed to rest today." Now, this is what I say. Can I honestly say I do it? No, I've had fatigue from long COVID for over a week. And I hate taking naps and I hate just having to rest. And I'm feeling like I'm being very lazy, and I have to keep reminding myself, you need to rest your body so it can recover. You're not being lazy. But my inner critic has a field day. You haven't done a darn thing today. So we all have to work with our self-talk and how we talk to ourselves. That's the first step, I think, in becoming more loving of ourselves and therefore of other people. So, but while you're learning to kindness, it's hard to do in the middle of the day, in the middle of your inner critic beating you up, to say, wait a minute, I think I should change my self-talk. And that's why it's easiest to practice it in formal meditation sessions. Kindness can be practiced anywhere. You can use meditation, a kindness meditation, in traffic jams, on the bus, in a store, at work, on an airplane. You can use it anytime to calm your mind and keep you connected to your heart. The practice focuses on the feeling, often using phrases of well-wishing to invoke that feeling. And I like the way Ajahn Brahm describes the practice, because it's the one that works best for me. He suggests that we start a campfire as a simile for cultivating love in our heart. And the campfire starts with paper. So your loving kindness practice is going to start with a puppy, a baby, or another imaginary creature that invokes the feeling of love. We simply feel that feeling of unconditional love. It's already in you, but it might be blocked by that brick wall you created to keep you safe. So we start with the paper, something that easily brings up a feeling of love or a feeling of unconditional goodness. Could even be a beach scene or a spiritual guide, anything that brings you that feeling of unconditional love in your heart. After the first flames of loving kindness have been established, you can let go of your imaginary creature or scene and put in its place a real person, someone very close to you emotionally, like your partner, a well-loved one, a family member, or a best friend. And you want to choose someone that it's easy to generate and sustain loving feelings for. Because we're trying to learn this, we'll save the more difficult people for later. In the metaphor of the campfire, they're going to be the thin pieces of wood called kindling. Feel the unconditional love, and if the flame dies down, add more paper. Go back to your imaginary creature. Then let go of the image of that person and substitute that of another close acquaintance, creating the feeling of loving kindness around them by using your inner speech in some way, such as, may you live in happiness. And imagine them right in front of you until your loving kindness glows bright and constant around them. Then you'll substitute a neutral person, maybe someone you don't see often or someone you don't even know. And this is the meditation you can do on the bus. See someone on the bus that you don't know and say, may you be happy, may you be well, may you be at ease. And really feel the feeling, more so than just saying the words. And in the simile of the campfire, you're now putting on the logs. The fire's now roaring and very hot, and it can now burn the wet and sappy logs. Think about someone you find very difficult. You're now able to share the healing golden glow of loving kindness with them. Maybe you say things like, may you learn the way to true happiness, or may you hold your fears with compassion and care. The fire of loving kindness burns strong and nothing can withstand it. Next, there's one final wet and sappy stick to be tossed on the fire of loving kindness. Most meditators find the hardest person to give loving kindness to is to themselves. Over time, you'll find that practicing loving kindness does have a softening effect on your heart. It evokes feelings of love, tenderness, and warmth. However, the softening of your heart can also expose difficult or painful buried emotions. If that's the case, bring your focus back to your imaginary creature to strengthen your loving kindness muscle. Kindness meditation can help us develop a selfless love. It's not all about me and getting you to love me. And it's not about you behaving in a certain way that I like. It develops a quality of just loving acceptance, that I love this person, they're not perfect, but I accept they're not perfect, and I'll love them with their strengths and with their weaknesses. It kind of acts like a self-psychotherapy, a way of releasing our troubled mind from pain and confusion. It has the immediate benefit of sweetening and changing old habits of negative patterns of mind. The more we focus on loving kindness, the less we're going to have the negative patterns in our mind. We're going to incline our mind more toward the positive and the loving. But that only happens if we do loving kindness for ourselves. And as I said, it took me a couple of years of doing loving kindness practice before I could include myself, because it just felt too automatic, too phony. And I just had too many brick walls in front of the love that's inside of me. And I had to take the time to take some of the bricks off the wall before I could see the goodness inside of me and the love inside of me. So by doing kindness for ourselves, we can develop a calm mind, a mind that's free from anger, greed, and jealousy. Only in the fertile ground of a peaceful mind can love flower. Think about it. You can't start to love someone if you don't have a peaceful mind. If you're all worried and anxious, your love won't grow. So if we calm our minds, even if we don't feel the love, it will work anyway. If we keep doing this, it will work. Trust me, it didn't work for me at first, but over time it did. You've got to keep doing it, staying with the intention to grow the love within yourself, repeating the phrases and making a connection with yourself. And it inevitably will work. When we set the intention to be better friends to ourselves and others, we realize that we all want to be happy and free from suffering. And for me, that's what this practice is all about, is how can I be happy and free from suffering, and at the same time, encourage others to be happy and free from suffering. So, any thoughts or questions?